It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We get an update now on the condition of roads and bridges in our state and the status of road construction season, which got an injection from the bipartisan infrastructure law. The State Department of Transportation got approval in April to deploy our state's allocation for infrastructure improvements, nearly $283 million in additional aid for roads, bridges, state highways, bike paths, and more. Join in on infrastructure where you are. Questions, 800-642-1234. Craig Thompson is here, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Secretary Thompson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, as you see, road construction season, dozens of projects underway, over 100 happening across our state this summer. Supply chain, labor shortages are challenges, of course. How are road projects being affected?
Well, as you said, we've been moving forward. We've moved forward in all of the last three construction seasons without interruption. We haven't had to cancel any of our lettings or any of our projects. But, you know, this summer we are seeing the effects of inflation on some of our bids that are coming in. For the 3 years prior, we had overall let savings, meaning the bids were coming in lower than the engineer's estimate. But recently, in the last 6 months or so, we're seeing run about 11% above. So it is having an impact.
What happens when your bids come back much higher than you anticipated?
Well, you know, that's a great question. We have they're sealed bids. They come in, and if it is in some cases, if it's a single bid, if no other bidder bid on that project and it's significantly over, then in those cases we'll tend to reject the bid and send it back and hopefully make some modifications where we can have a bid come in lower. If there was good competition and other things and it was still over, that does happen with the cost of goods coming up sometimes, and we'll still end up signing the contract. That's a cost we have to move forward on.
Are there particular projects that you see that are lasting longer than expected due to the economic conditions, the labor conditions?
We have not. We have our on-time completion of the projects. We have not seen any significant delays. As a matter of fact, during the pandemic, we were able to close some more lanes during that time and do some adaptive scheduling, and actually were able to finish some of the projects ahead of schedule. So to this point, we're not seeing delays in projects.
We talked about how the five-year time horizon of the infrastructure law funding is really tight to complete projects. When you think about a highway project might take 6 years or longer to move from concept through construction. Now that we're 8 months into the infrastructure law, how do you see those funds being deployed and moving into projects?
Well, I do want to be clear. We know what we're going to be getting for the next 5 years. We've got certainty of that amount. We don't have to finish the projects in the next 5 years, though.
Okay.
But each year we get the federal money, we do have to obligate that federal money, which means, well, we have to put it on a project that has an idea, it's in the system. We have to do that within that same federal fiscal year, or we do lose the money. And so for this very first year, as you said in the beginning, we got approval in April. That was very late because the federal fiscal year is September 30th. But we were able to work with our local partners. That's where it becomes harder, is with our local governments who we're trying to share a lot of the money with. And we're confident we're going to meet all those dates, but it was a lot of work.
Where are the pressures with local governments and the infrastructure that they need improvements on? Where are the greatest needs at the local level?
Well, I'd say if you look at in our state, about almost 90% of the lane miles we have are on the local system. We have a tremendous amount of town, city, county, village roads. And we went decades without really investing, getting new revenue into our transportation fund, which is why we were so thrilled that in the first budget under Governor Evers, we finally came to agreement with the legislature on a new revenue package. And we've been able to get the counties, cities, the villages, and towns in the last two budgets, the biggest increases they've seen. Their general transportation aids, which is their general pot of money for transportation, is up 14%. Their local road improvement program, we were able to put in $90 million more the first year and $100 million more the second, which is by far the largest increases they've seen. So we've been able to get a lot of our state resources to the counties and the cities and the villages and towns. And now with this federal money coming in, we're dedicating all of the bridge money to the locals. And a good portion of the formula money. So the locals are actually going to be receiving about 70% of the overall federal money we're going to be getting. And the legislature agreed to that, at least for this first year. We'll have to come in again. So they've got a tremendous amount of just road needs and a fair amount of bridge needs. But hopefully we're getting these dollars out, and it's going to start having an effect.
Talking about road, bridges, infrastructure projects happening across Wisconsin, state and local level, our guest is Craig Thompson, the state transportation secretary. Join in with questions, 800-642-1234. So the state opened its first flex lane recently, and this is for option for drivers along the Madison Beltline, open to drivers during rush hour on weekdays. How is the system supposed to benefit drivers?
Well, we're very excited how the flex lane is performing so far. We were able to open on July 13th. We did a lot of consulting with other states that have done flex lanes, including some of our neighbors, Michigan and Minnesota. And it really was a way to try to get more reliability on the back on the Beltline during peak times without having to add more real estate or more capacity in that way. So we were able to strengthen, and while we were doing other repairs on the Beltline, and use that shoulder, that inside flex lane now during peak times. It's generally during the morning and afternoon drive times, but it is monitored with cameras. We have folks down in our transportation management center that are monitoring it. So we were able to use it, went to clear an accident. If there's Badger games going on, different things, it is dynamic, and it will respond to when there gets to be enough traffic that there's slowdowns, we will be opening up that lane.
It's dynamic, but it's oh so tight. I mean, that shoulder takes my breath away because the barrier is right there. And if you look down for even a second, I mean, you really have to stay alert.
Well, we do want to make sure that people are staying alert when they are in that flex lane and when they're using it. So far, and it's a very, very short period of time. So we need a lot longer data. But so far, safety is up. Accidents have been down a bit, but we will be continuing to monitor that the entire time. But as I said, we work very closely with law enforcement in the area. We've done a lot of studies with other states that are doing this, and we're confident that it will be as safer than it was before.
What is your timeline for gathering data and the process here of what you're trying to figure out with this flex lane?
So we'll be gathering it, as we go. We've already had updates on it. But, I think once we get a year in, we'll have more statistically significant data. I think our belief is that it will not only improve people's drive time and ability to get to and from work, but reduce accidents. And we think take some of the pressure off of some of the other roads in Madison, like University Avenue and some of those that are sort of alternative routes.
We have Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson with us as we explore priority transportation projects, the mapping of federal infrastructure dollars to transportation projects underway in your community. Join in on road and bridge repairs, highways and interstates, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Transportation Department has more than 160 construction projects underway statewide. That's the count from the 511 Construction Projects map that provides information about road projects around our state and their status. We're breaking down the latest on the construction season, long-term projects in light of the infrastructure law infusion. Your questions and feedback, 800-642-1234. DOT Secretary Craig Thompson stays with us. Let's talk about electric vehicles, EVs. Your department recently submitted Wisconsin's new electric vehicle charging infrastructure plan to the federal government, asking for $78.7 million in federal support. How will that money be used, or what is that plan like?
So in the federal infrastructure bill that passed, there is over $7 billion that are available for electric vehicle, basically charging infrastructure. And Wisconsin, if we're successful in the plan that we're submitting, would be eligible for that money you talked about $78.7 million over the next 5 years. So we submitted the plan. We had to be able to demonstrate in that plan that we would be able to put in fast charging, level three charging stations along our alternative fuel corridors at least every 50 miles and no more than a mile off of the exit. And the alternative fuel corridors are what the state asks to be designated by the federal government. So in Wisconsin at this point, it's I-90, I-94, I-43, I-41, US 53, and US 151. And then we had a little gap in the northeastern part of the state, so we also asked and got approval to designate US 51, or parts of 51, 29, US 2, and 141, and all of US 8, and all of US 41. So along those corridors, we were demonstrating that we would be able to deploy the level three charging stations every 50 miles, no more than 1 mile off of the exit.
So that's reducing that range anxiety that people have about driving their electric vehicles across country. What about in local communities? What do you see there with charging?
So I think, you know, this is with these federal dollars, what we have to be able to demonstrate is that we could accomplish that along those alternative fuel corridors. If we have any money left over, then we've got more flexibility to work off of those areas. But I think we're going to see the private market as well as in local governments and others. I think it's going to drive even, you know, a lot more charging off of that area, whether it's at hotels, whether it's at other venues where people stay for a while. Because, you know, if you look at the auto manufacturers have weighed in and they are changing. And GM has said within 10 years they're going to be producing 100% electric vehicles. So this is coming. And states that are ready and there is not range anxiety and people feel comfortable to come to their state are going to reap the benefits. And states that don't have that are going to lose out.
Along those lines, you have a Lake Michigan EV circuit tour to promote Great Lakes tourism. What do you see happening there?
Yes, so we were very excited to be down in Racine announcing that the other day. Governor Evers and the governors of Illinois, Michigan, and Indiana all signed a memorandum of understanding that we would work together to deploy chargers along that Lake Michigan tourism route to make sure, again, that all of the tourists that we have coming to each of our states, hopefully Wisconsin the most, but that they know when they go to state parks, when they go to microbreweries, when they go to these different areas, if they're driving an electric vehicle, that they can do so without worrying about being stranded, without being able to charge their vehicles.
The public comment period on the electric vehicle plan concluded at the end of last month. How, you know, I know it's early, but how do Wisconsinites feel about the plan?
You know, we got a lot of great input. So there was a lot of support for the plan. There was a lot of questions. Some people had questions about whether we have capacity on the grid, which the short answer, I think, is from talking to PSC, and that we do. But there was also a lot of good suggestions. A lot of people, I think, excited, but also with a lot of questions about how it's going to work.
Craig Thompson here, Secretary of the State Department of Transportation, as we look at infrastructure improvements, roads, bridges, and the infrastructure of our state, projects underway. You can join in 800-642-1234. Ryan is joining us from Blue Mounds. Ryan, hi. What's your question?
Yeah, I'm wondering what's going on with the construction on Highway 18-151, where all they're doing is cutting big holes in the concrete and filling them in again. And it seems to do it. They seem to do it every year where they cut these rectangles of the concrete out and they pour it back in and that's it. This is out by Mount Horeb.
Ryan, thank you. Secretary, what could be going on?
Yeah, so that Mount Horeb area out there on 151, there were some joints that needed to be replaced. So that's what he's saying, when that concrete, there's areas of it being cut out and replaced. So we've had to have joints. Hopefully, I don't know that it's been going on every year, but it is a situation that is going on right now and should be wrapping up this year.
What about potholes? Governor Evers was on a statewide pothole filling tour and discussing local investments. Is the state spending enough to keep up with these needed pothole repairs?
Well, like I said, I think we've gotten historic increases to our locals from the state level over the last couple of years. And now the federal money coming in, we're going to be sharing about 70% of that money with the locals. So I think we're definitely directing a lot more resources to the locals, but they have got a lot of system to keep up, and we fell behind for a long time. So I think when we look at trying to put grades on our system and that, we have to make sure that that we are looking what period of time we're checking. There is a tail to some of this. It takes a little bit of time for these improvements to be able to go out and have the pavement vans run over and notice the difference. But we already are seeing some of the difference. The decline has stopped overall in our conditions and starting to prove. And I think over the next couple of years, I think we will see steady improvement. But it does take time because the locals, they've got a long way to go.
Can you give us an update on the Milwaukee area, I-94 East-West Corridor project, all those interchanges? What is the latest from the public involvement meetings, and you know, where are you at with the process?
Sure. So on the I-94 East-West, so for people unfamiliar, it's that about 3.5-mile stretch that's in between the Zoo Interchange, which is finishing up, and the Marquette Interchange in front of American Family Field. So the legislature agreed to enumerate to move forward again that we have to fix it, but we agreed to go to what's known as a supplemental environmental impact statement so that we could look at traffic patterns post-pandemic. We could take a harder look at some of the assumptions we had made, and we could have greater input from the public. So we've had some of those public information meetings. We did make a significant change that we've proposed to the stadium interchange, which I think received tremendous support. It's going to be lower than was initially designed and take up less real estate. I think it's still going to serve the Brewers well, but it's reduced the cost and reduced the size and scope of that interchange. It's changed 175 underneath to be less kind of a thoroughfare and more there's stoplights. There's going to be the Virgin Diamond. It's going to feel more like a boulevard. So I think we received a lot of good input. I know a lot of people want some more transit options as part of that, which we are putting significant resources in for mitigation as part of that. 27th Street and some of the other routes that we've worked with County Executive Crowley in Milwaukee County on. So we've been trying to listen to as much of the input as we can, and then be submitting a preferred alternative to the Federal Highway Administration later on this year.
Let's go to John in Verona. John, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I'm wondering, Secretary, as we positively move towards more electronic vehicles, so that will impact the amount of fuel taxes for transportation needs and repairs. What ideas are out there to maybe fill that hole, if you will?
Secretary Thompson, could you make that out?
I did.
Okay.
I didn't hear the gentleman's name, but it was an excellent question. This is a question that people in transportation have been sort of talking at a theoretical level for a decade or so, knowing it's coming, but it's getting to be very real. Yeah, we do largely fund transportation. The biggest source right now is through the gasoline tax. It's always been considered a user fee. The more you fill up the more you drive, the more you fill up your tank, and then you pay through the gas tax. But if we're all driving electric vehicles, the gas tax is not going to be a good user fee for transportation. So, you could look at doing a vehicle miles traveled fee, which would still be a user fee. There's different parts of the country that have been piloting that. One way is we get away from the user fee idea and we just start to fund it out of, you know, general tax dollars like other areas. Or you could look at a surcharge on the electric, on the charging, if people are driving EVs. You could look at more open road tolling and that sort of thing. I think those are generally the topics that are on the table.
Some counties, charge wheel taxes, vehicle registration fees. Would that be an additional thing on the table if we transfer more to EVs?
You know, I guess it would be, but I really think that when we saw the proliferation of wheel taxes among locals, it was really, again, when we talked about going decades without providing locals the resources they needed, I think it was more out of just sheer necessity and desperation that they couldn't keep up with their system. But while I think it in areas can help them get some more resources in, it many times it's a small supplement to the overall problem.
We only have about 20, 30 seconds left. You said bids are coming in high. Do you anticipate this longer term that you're going to just see projects, the cost of projects going through the roof?
Well, like I said, we've seen them running 11% higher. That is considerable, but how long it will last, we don't know. Over the last 4-year period, we've still got net savings, but we are definitely seeing costs impacted right now, and I think our construction industry is feeling it, and I don't know how long that's going to last for.
Secretary Thompson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Craig Thompson is Secretary of the State Department of Transportation. Ahead this hour, we get perspective from the Wisconsin Section President of the American Society of Civil Engineers about the structural condition of our roads and bridges and what to watch out for. Ask the Civil Engineer, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News Update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The American Society of Civil Engineers is tracking progress on the $1.2 trillion infrastructure law for its members. They created a one-stop tracker to break down the funding by project type, as the law has a massive project impact on roads and bridges, on transit and rail and dams and levees. Join in on the engineering work of rebuilding highways and bridges, other infrastructure in poor condition where you are, 800-642-1234. Jennifer Schaff is president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers, a technical resource engineer with County Materials Corporation headquartered in Marathon. Jennifer, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you so much for having me today.
So of the road construction projects happening across Wisconsin in the height of construction season, which improvements could make the most difference, could make the greatest impact?
You know, that's a great question, Kate. We see, if you look through our report card on roads, we see a lot of issues with deficient roads costing drivers $6 billion annually due to wear and tear on vehicles, wasted fuel due to congestion, and the overall cost of crashes. And I think, you know, we talk about this estimated $13 billion shortfall over the next decade if roadway improvements are not funded, because DOT hasn't had funds to be able to do the repair work they want to. They've resorted to resurfacing most non-interstate roadways just to make them usable. And that doesn't fix roadway features that are causing these congestion and safety issues.
What I'm hearing is repaving may not be just an easy fix, an easy answer.
Correct. Yeah. Roadway features in Wisconsin are likely a contributing factor in approximately one third of fatal crashes. And the other statistic I always like to tell people is that drivers on rural roads throughout the state, the fatality rate doubles the national average.
Why is that? What is happening on rural roads?
So there's roadway features, geometric features that need to be corrected. Things we're talking about are like narrow lane widths, steep side slopes, inadequate sight distance. And these features aren't improved with mill and overlays. Typically, it requires a full construction of the roadway and likely some real estate acquisition, which requires investment and some time.
Have there been material improvements that make surfaces more resilient, less in need of what feels like just constant repair in the spring and summer months? What have been the greatest advancements?
That's a great point. I think part of that you're seeing, Kate, is that because DOT hasn't had funds to do reconstructions, they've been resurfacing to make them useful. And what we see is as roadways end or get to the end of their life, the deterioration happens much more quickly. You know, in terms of materials, we've had a lot of technological advancements, not only in the methods of producing products, but how we construct them as well. So if you think about as of 2018, the average age of the state's bridges was just under 40 years old, which is lower than the national average of slightly under 45 years. So let's look in back in time 45 years ago. That's around the late 70s. We see several of the first personal computers were sold. We were still using floppy disks. We saw the first Sony Walkman come to the market. And we didn't have cell phones until the early 80s. So all of those advancements are infiltrating into construction, how we construct things, how we make materials. And they've really changed how we conduct business. You know, it was impressive during the pandemic to watch how people adapted to doing online pre-bid meetings and bid openings and activities that they needed to get done to keep things moving.
The transportation secretary says bids are coming back much higher than expected. Is there skyrocketing material costs right now that maybe we're not realizing?
You know, I think there are material shortages that we're seeing. And so, you know, lead times on certain items are a little bit longer. Steel is one area where we see shortages. I think businesses are able to anticipate some of those shortages and they're ordering, you know, if they have the financial ability, they're ordering ahead of time. But certainly specialty items are difficult, you know.
What would be an example of a specialty item?
Box culverts, for example. Those are pretty much designed site specific. And the steel is special typically for each one. So
let's talk more about bridges, because the American Road and Builders Association says 987 bridges across our state are structurally deficient. How do you feel about the selection of bridge repair projects that are underway?
That is a great question, and I'm so glad that you asked that. We would agree with the number that you're mentioning. Most of the structures are built with about a 50-year lifespan. So maintenance and monitoring, and we talked about, remember that then the average age of the state's bridges in 2018 was just under 40 years old. So we're getting close to that lifespan. So maintenance, monitoring, and planning for replacements is a really important part of our infrastructure work. And Wisconsin DOT does have an asset management system that analyzes structure condition based on routine inspections. And they can use that information to predict future deterioration and necessary structure work. And that really helps needs going forward. And I want to give kudos to Wisconsin DOT. Asset management systems are very helpful. And there's good statistics to show that they save money.
Is there a typical lifespan for a bridge, or does that vary?
It varies, but typically we see about 50 years.
And how do engineers determine when a bridge is nearing the end of its lifespan?
I would say, Kate, that that happens through the inspection work that they do, looking at the deterioration and making a prediction based on that. And keep in mind, it doesn't mean that these are imminent failure. It means that they're being monitored and maintained, and Wisconsin DOT has shown to be prudent in their approach.
Jennifer Schaff with us, president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers, as we look at infrastructure around the state and the eye of a civil engineer, that perspective. Join in what you would like to ask from an engineering perspective, 800-642-1234. Jennifer, you know, it's been about 8 months since the $1 trillion infrastructure bill became law, giving Wisconsin about $5.5 billion in federal funding to spend on transportation projects. How do you feel about the state's plan thus far?
I think they're being prudent in their approach. I think I would agree. You know, one of the callers asked about, you know, how we're going to navigate having EVs and all the infrastructure that goes along with having EVs and hybrids. I'm optimistic. However, I do think that we need to be talking about long-term funding for transportation.
Because if we're, you know, in need of $13 billion in repairs and we don't have a steady stream of reliable funding coming in, the backlog will just get worse and worse?
Correct. And, you know, as Craig alluded to, Wisconsin has a relatively narrow funding base. They rely on gas taxes, which you talked about, and title and registration fees. And so with, you know, I think I heard Ford Motor Company is going to be switching to making all EVs at a certain point. That is not part of our funding policy currently. So we need to come up with a funding policy that's adequate, sustainable, and reasonably proportioned to transportation modes.
I want to hear from the co-chair for your society's infrastructure report card and the need for road repairs. Darren Olson spoke with WUWM last year. Let's take a listen.
In Wisconsin, sure. You have an estimated $13 billion shortfall over the next decade in roadway improvements and funding for those improvements. So there's a lot to do, and there's just a very large maintenance backlog.
So Darren, echoing what we've been talking about, what is your company in particular seeing in the amount of need for fixing roads and bridges? How much work is there?
There's a lot of work, Kate. We're hearing that the fall letting is going to be one of the biggest, but we'll have to see how that all plays out, right?
Are there enough engineers and enough people to take on these construction projects? You know, work that we don't see that goes on in the background to get a project from, you know, the concept and planning to completion?
That's a great question, too. I think a lot of us are in the situation of not having enough people to do what we need to do in business. And the transportation and infrastructure categories are no different. I think we're doing what we can with what we have. People are certainly moving as they see opportunities, and it's creating challenges. I think we're navigating it thus far. And I think Craig's comments about project schedules, keeping things on time, would echo those remarks.
And your business absorbs the cost of materials when you're ordering well in advance. That is, you know, taking on that overhead. Not all organizations can do that. How much impact does that have in ordering well in advance and anticipating what those customers might need?
It's a challenge, Kate. I mean, we certainly want to make sure that we have product available and want to make sure that we're planning for it. It's a heavy lift, no doubt. And anticipating specialty needs is just really challenging.
We have the president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Jennifer Schaff stays with us on crumbling infrastructure, on the bids, on the engineering view of priorities. Still time to talk about the future of Wisconsin's infrastructure needs and what comes first. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House released updated fact sheets in recent days detailing the progress of the bipartisan infrastructure law. It says in Wisconsin there are 979 bridges and over 1,900 miles of highway in poor condition, and that the law will rebuild our roads and make critical investments in underserved areas. Join in on infrastructure where you are, what you see, 800-642-1234. Jennifer Schaff is here, State Section President of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and stays with us. Let's take a call now. Jack is joining us from Madison. Hi, Jack. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi there. You know, it's really interesting because thinking about what your guest was just talking about with funding for roads and bridges, you know, my dad and I were driving somewhere last Saturday, and we were talking about how cool it would be if we had something like the Illinois tollway system, you know, regardless of your thoughts and feelings on that, as a way to pay for roads and bridges, because it's a shared service that, you know, everyone uses – who has a car. And what's nice is, you know that the roads are going to be maintained, you know, for every driver that passes through a tollway scanner. Mm-hmm. And so I know that some Wisconsin legislators were talking about floating that as an idea, like to create a tollway like they have in other states. But do you have much insight as to like where that's going now as a means of paying for roads and bridges in Wisconsin?
Jack, thank you. Jennifer, your insights there on tollways. Jack saying that the Illinois tollway system might be one concept there to look at, but it makes some people bristle.
It does. I appreciate Jack's comments, though. I do appreciate how efficiently it operates when I drive through Illinois as well. I think, Craig Thompson talked about some alternatives, using the general tax fund, using a surcharge for EVs and hybrids. I think a user-based fee has also been talked about. What I see is folks in the know really talking about the user-based fee, but we'll see how things play out. And I'd like to note, too, there's a portion of IIJA funding that advises states and federal governments to consider long-term funding solutions for transportation and alternatives to motor fuel taxes, including the mileage-based user fees. So there's about $125 million marked to fund pilot programs there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I agree with you, Jack. It seems like it works, doesn't it?
Jack, thank you for that call. I'm wondering, when I pass a construction site, Jennifer, sometimes I'm taken aback because it doesn't seem like there is a lot of activity, that maybe not everyone is working where I'm just inching along and so much is sectioned off for construction. Can you take us behind the scenes in an area like that and what is being worked on or why it may look like nothing is happening?
Kate, that's a great question, and I will do my best. I also am in that boat when I'm driving. Like, why am I still standing here? And it doesn't seem like there's anything happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Construction staging and actually designing how construction activities are going to take place is really a big part of what we do with construction projects. And sometimes we have to move vehicles around to make room for some work that we're doing at night or materials that need to be stockpiled and those sorts of things. So there is a reason behind it, although I know sometimes when you drive by, it sure doesn't seem like it.
Because you also have to think about what that project site might look like in the middle of the night when activity is also going, full on and there's a lot of work being done.
Correct. And I just heard some interesting comments about climate change and how increasing temperatures are likely to change actually how we construct projects. So you might be seeing more of that as contractors move into doing more night work.
How is bridge and road design evolving, changing to withstand climate change, to with these extreme weather events?
It's a great question. Precipitation is projected to increase for Wisconsin, with most of the increases during the winter and the spring. And then extreme precipitation, those short duration, high intensity rainfall events are projected to increase also, which potentially increases flooding frequency and intensity. So, oftentimes those drainage structures that you see along the side of the road, they're not designed traditionally to accommodate these short duration, high intensity rainfall events well. So I think you'll see some work in that area. I know that it raises havoc with our wastewater treatment systems, getting influent infiltration in there. And then I also see some issues with our port systems and our inland waterways as we get fluctuation in water levels.
The rising and falling of water mm-hmm. levels. Jennifer,
exactly.
Jennifer Schaff with us. State of Wisconsin's Roads and Bridges is the topic. She's president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. So, Jennifer, your society released a report card on infrastructure for 2020, our state received this D+ for roads and transit. How can our state improve its grade in coming years?
Transportation funding is a big part of that. Asset management is a big part of that.
What do you mean by asset management?
So there is a lot of talk about using asset management throughout construction and DOT work. And we're starting to see it being used more and more. We talked about being used with bridges in Wisconsin. It's expanding into other areas of infrastructure. And it's really a good way of tracking what we have, knowing where it is, keeping an eye on maintenance costs. And there's good statistics to show that it saves money.
How does Wisconsin compare to other states? Are other states in this predicament with such a backlog on infrastructure maintenance and restoration?
I think all the states are struggling with transportation funding. I do have to give Wisconsin kudos. I had the opportunity to go to ASCE events and hear from leadership from DOTs in other states, and the situations they describe are much more dire than what we see here in Wisconsin. But that doesn't mean we need to take our foot off the gas. We have work to do. You know, 30% of our roadways have issue with congestion. I saw a statistic that if you live in Madison or Milwaukee, congestion costs you about $1,000 every year. Mm. So we need to be mindful of how we pay for our system moving forward. I think that's one of the biggest hurdles that I see.
In our last few seconds left, what's your top priority as head of Wisconsin's chapter for ASCE, American Society of Civil Engineers?
That's a great question, Kate. I think the biggest priority, especially with the report card, is elevating the need for funding for infrastructure. We have a lot of work that we're doing as a section, but this is something that, you know, all of us that are involved in the Wisconsin section live and work in Wisconsin and have raised families here. And so we really want to get the message out to people as to what's going on with our infrastructure and the needs that are out there. And if we're not telling the story, I don't think that people are truly aware. I've worked with a lot of water and sewer utilities when I was a consultant and met a lot of great people. And that's a place where I saw citizens really get involved with infrastructure funding and making decisions. And those utilities are really struggling. You know, there's a lot of growth. Their systems are... Oh, go ahead.
Jennifer, we're out of time, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Jennifer Schaff here on the Ideas Network.